2000 to make my debut and get the win, get a clean sheet, and we're top of the league for Christmas! Woo!
Welcome back to another episode of the Fran Kirby Fight Club, your one-stop listen to all things Chelsea FCW, and of course the legend, our new number nine, Fran Kirby. My name is Mariam Clark, and I'm joined by the one and only Andre Carlisle to talk all things West Ham and FA Cup. Andre, how's it going?
I'm doing all right. Didn't anticipate or want that to be Chelsea's first game, first performance of the year, but it happened. So I guess we got to talk about it.
Well, it's kind of like how you say this was meant to be a game for the romantics, you know, Sam Kerr and Christy Mears playing against each other. Instead, we got none of that and just a whole bunch of chaos. I mean, having not played since December 20th, did we really expect anything else?
That's true. Although I will say there are different brands of chaos, and I didn't expect, maybe I didn't anticipate Emma Hayes bringing her own for some unknown reason, but we'll talk about it.
To put a bit more sort of information on the chaos we're talking about, so as we say, 3-1 win against West Ham in the FA Cup fourth round. We were trailing from the 17th minute onwards thanks to Vivian Asai, and then it was only until the 70th minute when Mia Fischel, who came off the bench, smashed a shot into the top corner on the turn. Then in the first half of extra time, Aaron Cuthbert headed us into the lead shortly before three of our subs, so that was Melanie Leupold, Sagi Beaver-Jones and Sioke Nuskun, combined to make it 3. Now, as you say, there's a lot of the chaos was obviously on the pitch, but there's a little bit of chaos in the team news. So let's look at that. Pretty strong starting lineup. Ciro Musovic kept guarding the goal. We had a back four of Yves Perisay, Jess Carter, Khadidi Buchanan and Ashley Lawrence. Sophie Ingle was captaining in the midfield as a double pivot alongside Aaron Cuthbert. And then Gura Wright and Lauren James and I believe Johanna Wright and Ken Reid were forming the attacking trio behind Fran Kirby, our new number nine. And also a shout out to Natalie Bjorn, our new signing who came off the bench. But let's just kind of talk about that starting lineup because it was a lot of moving around. No Sam Kerr, Mia Fischel on the bench. We talked previously about what was going to happen within the team in regards to a striker type sort of player. And we said, fair enough, we've got enough players to make it work. And Emma did exactly that, which was to experiment.
Yeah, no, one thing I wanted to clarify, because this was the thing that I think hit the timeline and everybody was like very confused, is that Lauren James was playing the number nine. And that's what was so strange. It was probably confusing. And so I wonder what sites kind of got it, got kind of her and Fran Kirby's position swapped, because Lauren James was the nine, but she was doing Lauren James things, which you can anticipate Lauren James to do. And not only can you anticipate them, those are things you want Lauren James to do, except then you don't have a number nine in the box to do number nine things or to try and stretch the defense. It seemed like a very predictable problem. Like if before the game anybody would have said, okay, here's the lineup, Lauren James is playing the nine, I think just about anybody who's watched Chelsea any bit of time this season or even last would have raised their hand and been like, hey, so quick question, how is that going to work? Like, how is she, like, she might, I love Lauren James, but the way, what she is not really compatible with playing that position. I almost was like confused about why Emma Hayes did that and stuck with it for so long. It was annoying.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a bit about that because I think that the entire first half before we made substitutions at the hour mark was pretty much that frustration and annoyance. But I want to talk to you a little bit about our defence first, just because the first sort of big moment in this game was a goal that we conceded. And it was bizarre to me. It just seemed that we weren't prepared. It was a big ball from the goalkeeper, Mackenzie Arnold, all the way through over the top. And Buchanan was just behind the ball. Vivian was just ahead. And I also believe that Ms. Musovic was not prepared either because she was pushed up expecting turnover and possession. And then when she moved back towards her goal, she didn't position herself. She just moved back. She just cut the distance as, you know, in response to actually moving around. And Asai was able to score on the far right corner. That was just something I thought straight away. There was a sense of instability in our back line. As you say, Millie Bright hasn't been around for a couple of weeks. We were told 2024. We don't know what that means. But at the moment, Buchanan is slotting in there. And there seems a little bit of instability because of that change.
Yeah, and I think the worrying thing is that now that it is 2024, they asked Emma Hayes about a timeline for Millie Bright, and she said she doesn't have one. So,
oh, no, I hadn't seen that. No.
Yeah. So that's concerning. Regarding this match in particular, though, it was very strange to see that I think even though the goal happened and it was a ball that Chelsea never should have been caught out by and also one that should have been saved, I don't have any idea why Mucevic was so far over. I think if she gets her angles right, that's a pretty easy save, or at least she can get down, get a hand to block it, and then there's nobody else really to follow up. So a defender would have been able to collect possession and we're fine. We kind of get away with that moment. But in terms of the central defensive pairing, it was actually Jess Carter who was super unstable. And I think when you look at it and you see, like, we're used to Khadijah Buchanan being the one that just can't quite fit in, and Jess Carter was a little off. And I'm just like, okay, we can't have everybody rotate have these issues in games. And I do feel like Khadijah Buchanan maybe should have done better. I think she did leap and miss the ball. And that's what allowed SAU to get her to get the touch and then to get the shot away. But like, that was really the only thing, but it was also trying to figure out and make up for whatever was going on with Carter. So like, I'm no time frame for Millie Bright. Jess Carter suddenly playing weirdly, and I don't like that at all. Like, this was a game against West Ham. This is not, I know they play us tough for reasons that I don't have any like, I don't know, but like, I was expecting this to be a fun game, and instead it was quite stressful.
I'm glad you said that about Jess, because I wasn't gonna point it out. However, I watched the game yesterday on the FA Player, and I don't even want to talk about that experience because I didn't get to watch the game properly.
Yeah.
But I found a different site for highlights today, and I think whatever was with this website, the mics were really close to the managers, and so I've written down a couple of notes of stuff that Emma was saying when she was directing players, and the word Jess constantly the entire game, she's shouting at Jess. Johanna Kettering was another one. She was talking to a lot about positioning, but you know, I wouldn't have necessarily noticed it from those highlights because they were cut. But as you're mentioning it, it makes sense that she was constantly being told by Emma about positioning, and whether that was at play for that goal, even though we can say that Buchanan should have been in a better position. It is worrying because it just feels like our entire back line, and I said this in the last episode, that's more of a concern to me than not having Sam Kerr, because we have the players to replace Sam Kerr. We've got Mia Fischel. We can possibly think about where Lauren James might play, but I'm more worried about the lack of defensive stability in central areas, especially since we're not going to be signing anyone else. Emma's said it, you know, there's going to be no more arrivals. So yeah, that's a little bit concerning. But we did get to see Natalie Bjorn for her debut. She came on, she was part of the triple sub at the hour mark, and she looked really strong, confident with the ball. Just a bit of a change that I think was necessary.
Yeah, I was actually really excited to see her, and I'm glad she got in. You know how sometimes Emma Hayes can take a while to get new signings into games? I think the way that the defense played, she was like, okay, you got to get minutes like right now. And that given that the situation isn't great, but I enjoyed seeing her. She looked comfortable. She did win a couple duels on the ground and was a very good composed passer out of the back. And I'm just like, okay, if Millie Bright's not going to be around, we just need one of Buchanan or Carter to like be settled. And it looks like, you know, limited appearance, of course, against an opposition that we are heavily favored against. So all of those qualifiers, but I liked what I saw from her.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's a little bit out of pocket for Emma to do something like that. But I'm glad that we're recognizing that we need a sort of an instant boost to our back line, something we've been struggling for years. Now, looking to midfield, this was a bit more interesting because it's a midfield five, but Emma was likely playing Erin and Sophie Ingle as the sort of holding two, even though I felt like Erin was one of the players that was really dragging the team forward. So she was often doing a bit of an extra job in the centre of the pitch. And then we've got James, Kenride and Wrighton playing as the attacking trio. I thought Wrighton had a good game. she was getting a couple of shots from the left-hand side onto the bar. One thing I will say about James I noticed is that, as you say, I felt like Fran was playing quite deep to collect the ball, and then that gap that James was meant to be in wasn't filling. And then it seemed like halfway through the first half, James drifts out to the wide left, and then there's that huge space that Fran isn't able to get into. So I understand what you mean about there being a bit of a mismatch. It just didn't seem like things were clicking, because not just like internally for Lauren James having this conflict of whether to play the ball or take it forward and be kind of confined to a couple of long shots that weren't really on target. It just felt quite disconnected. And I think that Wrighton in that sense had to do a lot more as well from the position that she was playing in. I was quite interested to see how it would play out. But I feel like waiting for the 60th minute mark, or I think it was 65 minutes for the changes. Surely we should have known before that something wasn't working, that we could have tweaked something within the formational system.
Yeah, that's the thing that really is worrying about this game. You know, yeah, going down a goal, West Ham, a goal that should have been saved, a goal that shouldn't have ever happened is annoying. Eventually, I mean, the funny thing is, if you look at the score, 3-1 over West Ham, yeah, okay, you know, that's what you would expect. But then you look and you say, okay, West Ham had a lead deep, like into the middle of the second half, and it was extra time where Chelsea ended up scoring two goals. So like, it wasn't straightforward as the scoreline suggests. And then you dig into why, and it just gets more and more confusing. So I don't even really blame the players for the way that they played, at least in attack. I mean, we had, I think, like, what, 33 shots? There weren't a ton of shots on target. I think 10 out of 33. So that is a little bit wasteful. But still, it's tough. It's really tough, because I just don't believe that they were put in a good position until those changes were made. And I don't really know what Emma Hayes was looking for them to do, what kind of reaction she wanted to see when things clearly weren't working. Like, we've seen Emma Hayes make weird changes before, like starting lineups, and then at halftime or even in the first half, she'll make a substitution or she'll change something. I just kind of kept waiting her to I feel like even if she would have swapped Conrad and James, we would have been all right. Like, Conrad she has played forward before in Sweden, obviously doesn't do it frequently, but you really just needed somebody to run, a threat to run behind the line. And especially with West Ham, how they were trying to compact everything, I really think she would have one or two runs, whether they were offside or not, one or two runs behind the line, and the game completely changes. But that never happened. And it didn't really happen until Mia Fischel got on and actually played as a number nine, because we basically, until that point, were playing without one. And that was completely an Emma Hayes-led thing. And again, just super confusing, and I don't really get it.
I also feel like not just Mia Fischel coming on, but Melanie Leupold's coming on for Sophie Ingle. It gave Cuthbert a bit more freedom to roam, because at that point she was just sitting quite deep. And we know Cuthbert, we know how she's like. She likes to take the ball forward. She's capable of causing turnovers and being really tricky for other defenders. So it just felt like she was having to work as the holding midfielder, and then also as somebody trying to maneuver possession. And that was, again, affecting our attack in the same way that all the other issues were. So Leupold's coming on gave us a bit more midfield stability, and it kind of opened things up. And yeah, let's talk about that goal, because I just thought I had to watch it a couple of times from Mia Fischel. 70th minute, 1-0 down in an FA Cup tie. And it's just crazy to me because the two balls leading up to the shot she takes, they're not really great balls. I think it might have been Kenrid for the header, but it's slightly behind her and possession is kind of sort of ping-ponging around the box. And then she has no choice but to take this cross from behind her and spin. And it's just, it's outstanding, like the technique and the agility involved. And she doesn't even look, it's like a no-look shot because she has to take it from behind her. So I just, you know, I had to watch it again and again because I was so amazed at how she'd pulled it off.
Yeah, this, you know, I'm gonna try and keep myself calm. Because, you know, I'm a big Mia Fischel fan, and I understand her being new with the team. I understand you didn't anticipate the Sam Kerr injury, so you probably aren't prepared for the team to play substantial minutes or the rest of the season with her as the number nine. But, woo, this would have been if she was fit, fully fit, this would have been a perfect game for her to start. Not only just to get in the groove with the rest of the teammates, but just to get a goal, you know, and I'm glad she got one anyway. But I think like she could have really made a difference and the team could have kind of learned how to work with her as the number nine. But this was a brilliantly constructed goal. And this is kind of the thing about like classic striker play is it's difficult for many strikers to pull off because when you look at like the construction of the movement, so many little things have to be done perfectly in a short span of time to be able to make this strike happen. And so she needed the first touch to control the ball. She needed the quick turn and she needed the balance and the body positioning to make sure she connected with the ball pretty much off a volley and keep it down so that it could get into the net from close range. That's not easy to do. And the thing that I love about like classic center forward play is that like you have to construct all of that stuff in your brain and then execute it. Like there was no time to react. She had to, all the movements had to be in one motion and she did it and pulled it off perfectly when Chelsea absolutely needed it, because again, even though we expected her to score, now that things look more familiar, the changes came so late that there was a lot of pressure on the team in a very short period of time to turn the entire tie around. And a strike like that just completely eases pressure. I mean, it's not like West Ham was peppering our goal. So it's like, as soon as we equalize, you know that we're pretty much going to go through this if we have to go to extra time. Would have been interesting if it went straight to penalties at the end. Super glad it didn't, because I hate penalties. But like, yeah, I love this goal from her. And it's just, to me, it's just a glimpse of what she's capable of.
I think it's more astounding to think that the substitution was like in the 64th minute and the goal comes in the 70th. So yeah, like you're talking about that condensed time, but it's really like 6 minutes to get used to the speed and pace of the game and then figure things out and then try and find positioning in the box. And up until that game,
highlights how wrongly the starting lineup, like how wrong the starting lineup and the tactics were. It's just like it changed in a matter of 6 minutes.
That tells you everything, really. But up until that game, she'd only played 320 minutes. So I think we all know that she needs more time in the starting 11. But something tells me, something tells me, that she might be getting a lot more of that based on the back of this game. Because it's very clear that she has the ability to make instant reactions. And you can only think of what might happen if she was in the starting 11. But as I say, goal in the 70th minute, we come to the end of the game and it's extra time. Although I will say there was a moment just as we were heading into extra time that Musovic almost basically gave me a heart attack, because I think there's a free kick for West Ham and there's a deflection in the box and suddenly she's not in the goal. And I just thought, oh my God, that could have gone so, so wrong. That's just another thing to add to her performance yesterday. But heading into extra time, this is where I thought our attack and even our sort of midfield attack came to life, especially Aaron Cuthbert. And that header to make it 2-1, it was so Sam Kerr coded, because it's like the last person you expect in the box to be above everyone else. She's so tiny. But her run from the midfield to getting into that space was just sort of, she was so aware of what was happening and it was so needed, because as you say, 33 shots and 10 on target, we were wasteful with a lot of our chances and it came from someone you wouldn't really expect to be in the box rising up above everyone else.
Yeah, and honestly, I just think that sometimes the football gods aren't evil and sometimes they do reward good performances, because Aaron Cuthbert was so vital in that game and had such a good game that she just deserved a goal. And so her being able to win that leap, you know, she's not the tallest player in the world. Her being able to win that leap and get the right connection and get the header into the ground and by the goalkeeper, I thought it was great. And I thought she absolutely deserved it, because she had a hell of a performance. Like you said earlier, she had multiple jobs in midfield. She was trying to win the ball back. She was trying to hold. She's trying to move play, progress the ball to the attack. And then even sometimes she was trying to be the threat in the box. She was all over the place in the game because the tactics were just so weird that she was like, okay, I don't know what's happening, but there are many jobs to be done and I guess I have to do them all. And so shout out to her. But once things settled down, then she was able to finally get a goal. And I think a well-deserved one. And I love the fact that she got it, because if you watch that game over again, she was everywhere.
She was everywhere. And it felt like, you know, I think I watched the goal go in, and there's like a couple of moments where she's celebrating and she looks knackered. She's like out of breath, yeah. And she's got her head up and she's breathing hard, mouth breathing. It's when you know it's like you're struggling. Not that I thought she was struggling, but it's like it was just a perfect encapsulation of someone who had probably ran a marathon in that game. In fact, I'd be quite interested to know what the mileage was.
Right, she was, running data. It was all over that pitch.
Yeah. But that 2-1, it felt good enough, but there was still a bit of hesitancy in me because of how the game had gone. So for that third goal to go in, which was kind of a bit confusing because I think Aggie Beaver-Jones tried to sneak in and get it. In fact, I'm not sure whose person it's gone down as official, but I believe it's Sioki Nuskin who got that third goal. Thanks to Lopoltz's sort of looping cross into the box. She was just there hanging around in the goal, hoping to get a sniff, but I'm pretty sure it was already in by then. And you know what? I don't really care who it was because I just wanted the goal. So they can figure it out between themselves. I'm just happy we got the third.
I like that you spotlighted the Lopoltz pass because it was great. That was a great chip mm-hmm. over the top into the box. Really well weighted. And then after that, things did get weird. I saw, you know, Aggie Beaver-Jones has the ball, you know, brings it down, chips the goalkeeper, and you're like, ooh, that's real smooth. I like that. And then right at the line, Sioki Nuskin looked like she just put her foot out and tapped it across the line. And I was like, hey, did she just steal Aggie's goal? Why'd she do that? But maybe she was just making sure she didn't want to take any chances. I don't know. I'm looking at just the Google thing says that it was Aggie Beaver-Jones's goal. So hopefully that's true. I don't know who got it. I know in the immediate aftermath of the goal, all the Chelsea Twitter account and Chelsea Twitter was all about Aggie. But then when you looked at it, officially it was Shokanuskin's goal. So I'm hoping that it gets to Aggie because she actually did all the work and I think her chip would have gone in anyway. So hopefully that's the case. So it was just a very funny moment. And I was like, that's a party foul on Shokanuskin. What are you doing stealing goals?
It's one for the dubious goals panel for sure. Like someone has to sit down and look at that and do all the little lines they do and all the weird stuff because I think maybe putting your foot out that close to the ball is just instinct. Maybe she didn't even mean to do it. Maybe it's just happening sort of without her control. But the game finished 3-1. And I'm glad it was, you know, considering our first game since the Champions League tie against Haken in December the 20th, as I mentioned before, it didn't help that our lineup was all over the place and we weren't figuring things out that me official should have started earlier, but it ended the right way. And I feel quite good about that heading into next week's tie against United.
Yeah, though I will say probably didn't need an extra 30 minutes of match play in a game. Your first game back after a holiday break probably didn't need to have players get that much running in their legs this early in the season, and especially after a break. So I don't know what the impact of that might be, but yeah, glad obviously to get the win in advance in the FA Cup. Would have been really tragic if something would have happened and wouldn't have gotten through that tie. But yeah, it does make me a lot more concerned for the United game than I was. People were asking like me on the timeline, like, what is going on? And I'm like, it's one of two things. I thought either maybe me official wasn't fully fit, which we haven't heard anything about in the aftermath. I don't think anybody even asked it in the post game. Or it was Emma Hayes doing an Emma Hayes thing and trying to throw off United in the buildup for the big game. So I don't know. The second one seems a little bit hopeful, maybe giving a bit too much credit because I don't think you really want to struggle against West Ham and be down a goal for as long as you were just to throw off United. Like, I don't really think that's what you do. But it concerns me that, yes, we learned a lesson, I think, but what was the intended goal and why wasn't the clear, predictable result known beforehand? It seemed obvious to me and everybody else who was watching. So, and I know Emma Hayes is a really smart coach and she has different reasons for doing different things. I don't even know if it was something internal, like Emma Hayes was like, all right, Sam Kerr's down, you know, who's going to step up? And Lauren James was like, me. And she was like, okay, fine, you're the nine. Like, there could have just been a confidence building moment or something like that. I don't know. It was such an out of character decision that I can't figure out why it was made, but it has me nervous ahead of the United game because we can't make a similar mistake.
Yeah. And you would think that that's not going to happen two times in a row. Although I do, as I say that, I'm thinking of previous occasions where we've said, like, I don't know if it was the start of this season where we were playing really conservative football and we said that won't happen again. And then we did it again with Manchester City.
Yeah.
So I really, truly believe it's a one-time thing because how could it be anything else, right? You tried this one thing and it didn't work out. Most people, when that happens, they don't try that thing again, right? But I understand your concern for next week. So that's, I think that's Sunday, the 21st of January. I believe it's a lunchtime kickoff against United. I actually watched their recent defeat to Liverpool. I say recent, they've lost twice in the last eight games. And it was really interesting to see in that game, they scored 4 minutes in. They were really quick to start that game and they made Liverpool's, I think it was a back three, look quite narrow because they were stretching so much. And it was Ella Toon who got the goal. But from that point on, the communication that Liverpool were having between their back four or their back three and the goalkeeper was, in terms of possessive play, was really stunted. And after I rewatched the game, the Chelsea game, it just made me a little bit concerned about our back line and possibly Musovic doing something similar, because she did something similar today. And I mentioned two of the occasions, there was a third occasion where she had the ball and like a West Ham defender was like running, attacker was running from the left and she didn't see. And then there was like a deflection and the ball went off. I just think that this is a good game for Hannah Hampton to start. And I don't know if that's a... You're making a face. You made a face.
I just didn't expect that. I like it.
From that one game, was it against Bristol she started? I felt so confident about watching her play, and I think she deserves another go at this. I also feel more assured about her awareness of when to be playing the ball long and when to be playing the ball short, because I don't think Musovic is 100% there. She scares me a little bit, and playing against United feels like something that might be tricky, especially if one of our main defensive ball carriers, which was Millie Bright, is no longer around. So now you're referring to an understudy in Khadija Buchanan, who is a little not that confident with ball at her feet. So yeah, that's something that concerns me. I will say though, something I saw as the game progressed, that Liverpool game, is that United really struggle from corners and set pieces. The back four, I think they mark Sonley, and so overcrowding tactics really work, and both of the goals came from crosses from Liverpool. The same that would be said for the previous defeat, which was against Manchester City in the Manchester Derby. And so, you know, Mary Earps is absolutely amazing and she made a handful of outstanding saves in that game, but I think that the back line really struggle with containing crosses, especially if those crosses are deep. And Lauren James tried a handful of those types of crosses today, and I think that further sort of deeper runs from our fullbacks would have been more productive. So I'm interested to see if that's something that we see. But yes, I am concerned about the goalkeeping situation.
I'm very concerned about the goalkeeping situation too. I just can't get a handle on Musovic. You know, sometimes she looks comfortable and fine. Sometimes she pulls out amazing saves. Like I'm going to guarantee, okay, for everybody listening, not me being bitter, it needed to happen. If you've listened to me or read anything I've written in the lead up to the World Cup, you know I was not expecting the U.S. team to do anything. I thought it was going to be a poor showing, and it was. So I'm not mad about it. But the Musovic we saw in that game, I don't think any Chelsea fan has ever seen that before. And we haven't seen it since. Like this game, think about the goal that she saved from Lindsey Horan, and think about the goal that she gave up against SAE just a day ago. Like, no, mm-hmm. That's not the same person. It cannot be. So it's concerning to me that happened. And obviously it is one mistake, but it doesn't inspire a lot of confidence. So I am almost like, maybe Hampton should have started this game and maybe we give her a run of a couple games. I don't know. It's a big game to go against United. So maybe you don't make that change, but that's also probably why I would have tried to get, I mean, if you're swapping goalkeepers match to match anyway, and nobody can really predict who's going to be on the team sheet game to game and goal, maybe you do need to get Hampton more chances before the Bristol match, right? But that didn't happen. So I don't know. It's a tough one. I am more concerned about this game than I was before we played West Ham, and I just didn't expect that to be the case. And I'm kind of annoyed about it, I'm not going to lie.
I will say that Hannah Hampton is not a rookie. Like, if we threw her into this game, it's not like, you know, she's in a teenager or anything. She's got WSL experience with Aston Villa, and she is capable and confident. So I have no doubt in my mind if that we just suddenly switch goalkeepers, it's not as big of a deal in the reverse situation. Or even if someone else came in, I just think that
my concern with switching is like, yes, like you can switch between Musovic and Berger, but they've both been with the team for a couple seasons now, at least. I mean, Berger's been here a long time. The problem with Hampton is that she's new to a lot of the back line, who is also new in trying to figure out how to play without Millie Bright, and also, honestly, without Magda Eriksson. So, mm-hmm. like, there's differences there in terms of the communication, the organization, and that's what scares me. I know Hampton has started plenty of times in the league before, and she'd be comfortable from that standpoint, but just her connection with the rest of her teammates, it can't be as good good as it probably could be if we'd have given her more minutes earlier in the season.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I also think, like you, that obviously that is a big problem in terms of attacking creativity at the moment. We can't see a repeat of Lauren James playing where she was playing. I think Mia Fischel has to start. I would say even more so because United really struggle, as I say, from crosses and set pieces, even though they have one of the best goalkeepers in the world. That doesn't change anything defensively. And I think that could be a really good option for us if things aren't working out. Because United are sort of a high-pressing team, if we didn't have the options for central possession and we have to revert to crosses and set pieces, it's not a bad thing, really.
Yeah, I wish I had faith that I could look at the team sheet against United and I would see Mia Fischel and I'd be like, all right, we learned our lesson, we're gonna be fine. But I don't know.
This is the Can thing. Can you imagine? As you're saying, yeah, what I'm picturing is that a couple of hours before the game, the team sheet comes in and it's just not happening. And I check in with you and
it's
like,
a possibility.
You're falling apart. You're struggling.
But the only thing I'll say is that even if it's not Mia Fischel, it can't be Lauren James. And that, again, not a knock on Lauren James. It's just not her game. It's not what she does. She's valuable deeper on the pitch and she knows it. And that's what you want her to do. And that's just what she does. She doesn't have that game that's gonna even allow her to be a false nine. You know, it's not doable. So hopefully we don't see that again. I would love to see Fischel, but there's no way we can see the same tactics again. I do love that Lupos and Nuskin got in the match, hoping to see maybe one of them or maybe both in the starting lineup. I think I would love to see a strong midfield against United, knowing how they like to play. So yeah, I'm nervous about this game, and I was already like, all right, this is like a big early test, but now I'm even more nervous about the game just given how much weirdness happened. And I don't like where I'm at right now, Emma. Why did you do this to me?
I was about to say, you talked about being more nervous since yesterday, but I feel like I've made you more nervous from this conversation, if anything. Right, we've talked
it's not
a lot.
You, it's me.
we've talked a lot about negative things. Let's talk about something a little bit more exciting, although maybe not exciting to some people. Emma Hayes leaving at the end of the season, and that's all sad and tragic. let's continue crying. No, but actually, it's quite exciting in a different sense because this is a chance to pave a whole new system, a whole new way of seeing Chelsea as a team. So we're going to have a bit of a conversation about the leading runners in this, and I'll start with one of the main ones, or the one that people have sort of vowed for. Kacey Stoney. She's got WSL experience with Manchester United. She's obviously now with the San Diego Wave, I believe. She's been in there for 2 years and already done huge things with them. Is that something that you feel confident about, you know, someone who's done it not just in this league but in a different league as well?
You're trying to get me canceled. No, I think Kacey Stoney is an incredible coach. What she did, you know, basically handpicking the players and building United, winning the championship their first year, gaining promotion to the WSL, and then continuing to improve the team, even to a point where they signed, you know, Kristen Press and Tobin Heath and all of that, like impressive. You know, she goes to San Diego, an expansion team at the time didn't exist. She had to put it together very much in the same way. Has done a great job, won the Shield, which is basically winning the league here. Mm-hmm. We do the league title, and we also do a playoff tournament at the end, in case people don't know. So yeah, she won the league the last season, which was great. It was a great achievement. My concern is that I don't know how compatible she is with the talent that we have. We have a lot of really good attacking players, and Kacey Stoney is a bit more defensive. That's pretty much how she won the league. They didn't score a ton of goals. In fact, the team, this is how wild the NWSL is. The team that finished in 11th place out of 12 teams scored one fewer goal than Kacey Stoney's team. Just wow. One. So it was really the defensive record that ended up helping them secure the Shield. And it's just like, it would be a different direction for the team. And I don't have a lot of confidence that she has the capability or even the desire, given how she's developed her style of football over the past few years. She's still a very young coach, so this could happen. But when it comes to constructing fluid attacking styles that would utilize all of the talent that we have, I don't really know. From a player recruitment and development standpoint, she'd be great, especially for the defense. But I don't know how she would help the attack, particularly in big games.
Let me ask you about another name that might be familiar to you in the NWSL, and that's Laura Harvey. Maybe a bit more experienced. She's been in the US the last 10 years, and obviously she's won the Shield 3 times with the Reign as well, including one that took place this year as well. And someone who's had a bit more experience here as well. I'm pretty sure she's had spells with Arsenal and Birmingham. I think she's won a couple of trophies with both of those teams. And obviously then she went to the States. Is that someone who's a bit more inspiring in terms of their style of play than Casey Stoney?
So just looking at their style of coaching, yes, it is. But I will say I have a similar concern, not the exact concern, but a similar concern when it comes to bigger games.
Okay.
Laura Harvey is known for, you know, creating an extremely good culture and environment within her club. The team culture at Sushi right now, Seattle Reign, the team culture at Reign is incredible. They really like play for one another. They're a very close group. She has very fun and interesting vibes. Her pressers are always hilarious. So in that instance, she'd be basically like a mini Emma in that way because she's very, very funny. You don't really know where she's going to take it. She's a little bit more cheerful and jovial than Emma is. Like she's a little quirky with her personality sometimes. And she does like to create flowing attacking football, and she's pretty good at it. The problem is there's not really a great plan B, which sometimes you need in bigger games, or when you say, okay, we need to go win this game or we can't lose this game. Sometimes there's a struggle, mm-hmm. and that struggle ends up being the defense, where you give up a silly goal mm-hmm. or something like that happens. So it's almost like you got an inverse problem of what I was talking about with Stoney. So I don't really know. I do think Laura Harvey would be good for the players. And I think the type of players and specifically the unit that we have right now, I think they would gravitate to her and more easily, and it would be an easier transition maybe than bringing in Casey Stoney, but there still would be question marks. And honestly, nobody's a Mahaise, so I think anybody we talk about is going to bring up some question marks.
Okay. I like that. I think from what I'm hearing that Laura Harvey is not a bad option, but that there's still some areas in which we might need to gap before we go ahead and someone who's had experience both in the States and here. How about this? Luis Cortes, former Barcelona women's football manager, obviously led them to their first Champions League title. He has also had played a big role in a number of the rising stars, including Aitana Bonmati, somebody who's kind of aware of the level that we're trying to reach, especially when it comes to Champions League conversations. And unless I'm incorrect, I believe he left a job earlier this year with the Ukraine women's team. So he's available right away. Well, that must be tempting. That's tempting.
He's no longer available. Well, he might be no longer available. Depending, but he apparently took a job as Saudi Arabia women's national team head coach. So
really?
Yeah, that happened a couple months ago, maybe. I don't remember. So I don't know if this is an opportunity that he could probably talk his way out of that. Chelsea would probably have to pay. But I think the bigger thing is that in the reporting, which I believe it was, man, I always get stuck. Molly Hudson, the Times?
I think so.
I don't remember. But came out with the report about Chelsea's coaching search, and players were interviewed, and it seems the core of the players, the vets on the team, expressed that they would feel more comfortable with a woman coming mm-hmm. in as coach to replace Hayes. And there's been some chatter about that. And honestly, I don't have any issue with it. I think it would be a gigantic switch to go to someone else, especially a male manager. But also think about all of the things that have been written and talked about discussing Chelsea and how they manage, you know, and how they deal with like menstrual cycle and things like that. Yes, there's conflicting, you know, arguments about whether that's good or bad or necessary or whatever. It seems to work, and the players seem to buy into it and appreciate the work that's done, and specifically when it comes to things like injury prevention. It seems like they believe that it does help, and that's an important thing, and that the players are looking to continue that. I understand there being some discomfort if you suddenly switch and give all the information to a male coach, right? So I'm not necessarily saying that, like, that's the exact reason. I think there are multiple reasons, but that's one that, and I hope anybody could understand. So that does limit things a bit, but I also don't think, like, if Cortes is off the board, there's really not another male coach that you would go get. I mean, out of nowhere, Jonathan Raldes is heading to Washington Spirit at the end of the season, and he would probably be the only other one that you would look at coming available from as far as a male coach. So I think naturally it's just going to be a woman coach, which I think would be best for the players anyway.
Yeah, and I think I quite like the idea that we're in a situation here in this league, or just generally where that there's a lot of female managers coaches who are experienced enough to be able to take on these roles, even if it's short notice. But let's talk about a couple of others. I do have Carla Ward on my list, but I want to talk to you about a bit of a wild card in Sonia Bonpasta, former Lyon player. She's had two trophy-laden spells with them. She's also spent 8 years as academy director, which, if we think of a similar level coach, like someone like Gareth Taylor, who didn't have previous experience, I think he came in as like a recruitment specialist or something. This is somebody who has done it at the top level with Lyon, obviously winning the Champions League with the club in her first full season in charge. It's going to be quite a lot to ask somebody like that to come away from the club. They've spent so many years as players on a coaching level as well. And we obviously also have a similar situation with our academy, which is quite fruitful, and we bring new players up constantly. So if she was willing to take over Chelsea, would you be interested?
I would, but it's never going to happen. No. That's kind of where I'm at. Mm-hmm. You just don't willingly leave Lyon unless maybe it's a national team opportunity that gives her more, similar to what Mays is doing. If it's a national team opportunity that pays her very well and gives her a little bit of more like work-life balance, maybe that's something that she ends up doing. But I do not see her leaving Lyon to coach another club, especially another club that would be in the Champions League. I just don't see that happen.
Okay, that makes sense. Carla Ward, any interest? I feel like it's tricky because she's someone who's really close friends with Emma Hayes, so that makes it slightly more complicated. They're obviously quite close as friends, but we know that she's done an excellent job with Birmingham when they were struggling, and more recently with Aston Villa. This would be a jump up, though. This is, you know, quite the jump, if anything, really. So too much of a jump, or perhaps something that she can handle?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it'd be a bit too much of a jump. She's only just turned 40, so she's still a very young coach, which is not a knock against her. I mean, Giraldez is, what, 32? So, like, there are young coaches who have done a lot and deserve opportunities. But in terms of the Chelsea job, I just think this would be massive. I mean, her coaching resume is nice, and what she's done with Aston Villa has been good. But I think there needs to be maybe, like, one more level, one more job, one more opportunity to really to kind of, like, refine her style and her coaching abilities, and then maybe she'll be ready. But I think she's a very interesting selection and someone to keep an eye on for the future. I think depending on who takes over the job, if they give it 2 or 3 years or whatever, and there's a transition period, and then they move to someone else, you know, it will be weird seeing the Chelsea women job change hands, given that Emma Hayes has been there for 10 mm-hmm. plus seasons. So, but I also don't know if that means you should expect the next hire to remain at Chelsea for 10 plus seasons, you know? So I do think that we probably should get used to a lot more turnover than we've expected at the head coaching position. And even though coaches aren't fired with the same regularity as they are in the men's game, I still think 10 years with the team is asking a lot. So maybe she'll be ready in 2, 3, 4 more seasons, and she'd be a perfect person to come in at that point. I don't know. I just feel like right now the jump directly to Chelsea would maybe be a lot, but I wouldn't hate it.
It's quite interesting to hear you talk, because it's like I feel you have this idea of a perfect profile in your head, and I just think, are we going to really find
this?
Going to
profile Emma Hayes?
Yeah, is that profile Emma Hayes? But also every single person that we think of, there's going to be an aspect where something they're not good at, whether it's somebody who's like more left field, like Amanda Mikel, or as I've said, Sonia Bonpasta, or if it's someone more sort of experienced, like the other names. But even those other people have issues. So we've got to think about what we're looking for. Are we looking for somebody who's going to continue playing in the ways Emma Hayes has, or are we looking for somebody to come in and, you know, take all of that off and start from brand new? Because I don't think we need to start from brand new, but I wouldn't be against it if someone came in and had an entirely different philosophy.
I'll lift the curtain a little bit and give people a little reveal into our group DM with our third co-host who's doing some work there in Sweden with Linköping. So shout out to Mia. She was talking about Beta Gunnar's daughter, because she apparently has come up as well. Mm-hmm. Former coach of Kristengard. I'm sorry. I usually get my Swedish pronunciation decently, but Mia's not here. So I was like, I don't know. But yeah, so I don't know. That's an interesting one. I'm not as familiar with her system or capability. It sounds like she's held some pretty good jobs, including with the Iceland national team as well. So like, I think she'd be comfortable, but I kind of bring her up as kind of, you know, linking to your last point, is do we just kind of like look for somebody who's, you know, maybe up and coming or can bring in a different style or just do something? Because I would like to see, as much as I love Emma Hayes, I do think that there's a lot more She kind of focuses on a lot more tactical flexibility and variety than saying, like, this is the way that we play. This is how we're always going to play and dare you to stop it, right? I think that's how most of the really big teams that that commonly win the Champions League have played. Wolfsburg, we've seen that's what they play one way and they do it, right? Lyon, they play how they play. Barcelona, they play how they play. And I would kind of like to see that from Chelsea if we could get somebody that could construct this, the full type of system that would be capable of handling different, all the different challenges that are thrown at it. Like, obviously, you tweak tactics and do things here and there, but we talked about it earlier. Sometimes we can have a super defensive approach. Sometimes we can dominate the ball and look really fluid, which I think is great for winning like the league. But in terms of the Champions League, I think it's always difficult to know what occasion you need what for. And when you really ramp up, if a team doesn't allow you to, you don't have that experience of like, okay, now the players just know what to do in this system to be able to combat that or problem solve on the pitch. It always kind of seems reliant on the tactical plan. And that's not bad, but I think that's why there have been troubles and plus injuries and really good teams like Barcelona in the way. But I do think that I would like to see maybe that approach. And could Gunnarsdottir do that? Maybe. But again, this kind of gets to a want, and I don't really have a name to put out there. So yeah, it's just kind of like I'm talking to talk.
Yeah, because I was listing those names off, and you were like, nope, not her, nope, nope, nope. You weren't saying that, but you
I
were like,
clarify.
You had
I
a bit
clarify.
Of an issue with all of the names.
I want to clarify. I wasn't saying no to them, just pointing out things that will come up if they were a coach. So, like, I love Casey Stoney. I think she'd be great. There would be things to be concerned about if she became coach. Same thing with Laura Harvey, same thing with Carla Ward, you know, all of that. So, even though I have things to say negatively, or maybe just criticisms, not even negative, just this things that we would have to keep an eye on if they took over Chelsea. And it's not like Emma Hayes is perfect. We spent the first part of this podcast talking about what the hell she was doing with that game plan versus West Ham, right? But it's just like, this is such a tough thing to do, to get somebody to come in and replace Emma Hayes. Like, it's just really difficult.
But maybe that's the problem. We're looking, like you said it yourself, we're not looking for someone to come in for the next 10 years, right? Because that's a one-of-a-kind person, and Emma Hayes is one-of-a-kind person.
Yeah.
Maybe we got to go back to the drawing board in terms of what it is we're looking for here. And we have no idea what Chelsea are doing inside, you know, what their plan is. Are they looking for somebody for the next year, someone to just win the Champions League and then rebuild? You know, we have no idea. We can only speculate. But to end the pod on something a bit more positive, let's talk about predictions, because you know, usually that's my favorite bit. It's my favorite bit. We talked a lot of sort of scary things about Man United, and then we did a lot of good talking about new managers. But just to circle back, next week is obviously a big game. United are fourth. They're joint on points with Liverpool, who are fifth on the 18th, which should tell you how well Matt Beard's team is actually doing. They've had a phenomenal season.
Matt Beard to Chelsea.
Oh, yeah.
Return to Chelsea?
Possibly. They'd throw that name in as well. I wouldn't be entirely unhappy with that. But yeah, I think that it's going to be a difficult game. We need to win that game, and we need to get our tactics spot on. So banking on the fact that we do get our tactics spot on, and that Mia Fischel is playing, and that Lauren James is playing in a more number 10 role, I think that we will win 2-1.
Okay. I think we're going to draw, and I can't decide whether it's 1-1 or 2-2. I kind of want to say 2-2, because I do think United's going to score a couple, which means we would need to score a couple, because that's how draws work. So I think I'm going 2-2.
Wow. Yeah. Thanks for helping us end this podcast on a positive note. No, I think you're right. Maybe I'm kind of thinking more about our defensive situation at the moment, and again, the goalkeeper situation. But there's a number of ways in which this could go wrong, basically. Like, before it was just maybe one issue, but now it's like your goalkeeper, your defense, and your attack. We've got to get all of that right. And if one of that is slightly off, then the rest is slightly off. So let's circle back on the day itself. If, you know, if the lineup comes out and you don't see us tweeting, assume that both of us have decided to go into hiding. But That's next Sunday, the 21st. I think it's a lunchtime kickoff. So fingers crossed that all goes well.
Oh, I'm. Please win this game. That's all I got to say.
You have to pay for some money.